2 years ago, Americans watched in horror as a crisis unfolded at the Kabul airport.
She was tear-gassed and beaten.
Images of thousands desperate to escape Taliban oppression filled our news feeds. More than 80,000 Afghans made it to America. But the story didn't end there.
It was very cold. There was no power, no heat.
Who would help our newest neighbors? I'm Andrea Smartin. In Stranger Becomes Neighbor, you'll hear the stories of some remarkable refugees who left their homes and their dreams behind, only to start over from zero.
Their only possession was three blankets.
And you'll meet Americans who stepped up to help them.
You want me to come when you deliver your baby.
What can one person do in the face of an international disaster decades in the making? That's Stranger Becomes Neighbor. Find us at kslpodcast.com, follow us on Apple Podcasts, or anywhere else you listen.
It's a sunny day.
Sunny day now.
My pocket's empty, my cupboard's bare. But call me illogical, I just don't care.
Hey, hey, hey.
It's just a sunny day.
Hey, hey, hey. It's a sunny day.
It's just a sunny day.
Ooh,
yeah.
Hey. The KSL Greenhouse. Information and great talk about your home, garden, and your lawn. If you love perennials, can't get enough help on landscape design, or just want to keep your lawn and vegetable garden pest-free, grab a pen. It's the KSL Greenhouse on KSL News Radio.
Good morning. Welcome to the KSL Greenhouse. Maria Chalaos, Tom Bettis with you this morning. We are taking your calls at 801-575-8255. You can also text us your questions at 57500. Big thanks to Dave Meekum for filling in for me last week so I could just take a bit of a mental, physical break in this time of very stressful news coverage, Tom.
Yeah, it's been a week. We talked mainly about squash bugs.
Squash bugs, you too. Squash bugs and tomatoes, I know where you guys go.
Well, I'm already seeing squash going down.
Oh, no.
We saw our first pictures on Utah Gardening Experts and have started to get questions, and they weren't mature.
Uh-huh.
But there were bugs all over the squash with the classic symptoms that they're alive one day and wilted down the next and dead the next.
Oh, wow. I haven't even planted squash yet. So I planted a ton of tomatoes. I was really good. Got the garden all prepped, and that's all I've done. Just tomatoes.
Yeah. Yeah, that's all I have in this year so far, tomatoes.
Oh, this morning the plant of the week is Canterbury Bells, one of my favorites. Mainly it's one of my favorites, Ton, and you know I've told the story before because it was one of my grandmother's favorites. So whenever my Canterbury Bells come up, I just get those great memories of my wonderful grandmother who I owe. If I have a green thumb, I owe it all to her because she just loved gardening and everything did well for her.
Yeah, the Canterbury Bells are one that if you were, familiar with your grandparents or great-grandparents gardening, they're a Victorian-era popular English garden plant. And
my grandmother came from Greece.
Yes.
So why that?
They're native to the Mediterranean, though.
Okay,
so
there
you go. I can see how, mm-hmm. Even though we call them Canterbury Bells, they aren't native to England. They're native to the Mediterranean, so Greece, Italy, North Africa, those areas. But they're an extremely popular heirloom garden plant that will actually, and they're biennial, but they will self-seed.
Right.
And so they're ones that I don't think they're planted as much as they may be used to have been because you plant them, they don't flower until the next year.
Mm-hmm.
But they are so gorgeous and so carefree. As long as they get some water, you don't really need to worry about them.
They pretty much move all over my garden. They're in the middle of my vegetable garden right now. And, of course, I just let them go. And they'll bloom there. And then when they're done, I'll cut them back. And the tomatoes will still be happy as can be.
Yeah. And they're just, once you get them going, they're never overly aggressive. But they just self-sow. And I think that's why back, 100 years ago, when they were not, I won't say at the peak of their popularity, I wasn't alive then, but when they were more popular, one of the reasons for that is that they're gorgeous, but they also are easy to self-sow, they self-sow or you can collect the seeds. And when you don't have a greenhouse or if you don't live near somewhere that you can just go buy things, they're one that was easy to grow yourself.
Right. I notice if I do deadhead them, they do bloom longer.
They do. Anytime you deadhead a flower, they will bloom for a longer period of time. They don't require a lot of fertilizer, just if you want to, a touch when they first get going in the spring. But if you over-fertilize them, they can get a little bit leggy.
Yeah, how much water do these guys need?
I would, just looking at the requirements, 1 to 2 inches of water a week, depending on how hot it gets. And that would be, in an average soil, about a half hour of your, well, if it's overhead sprinklers, about a half hour, 2 to 3 times a week. You know, it just depends on how they're irrigated, but they need to be watered to a depth of 6 inches or a foot twice a week.
Yeah, I asked that question because with them self-sowing, they like to self-sow in places where there's not a dripper.
So, yes.
Like
yes.
I said, in the middle of the vegetable garden where there's no dripper.
Yeah. So there are a couple of varieties that will, if you plant them, will bloom the first and second year. Mm-hmm. The mixes are called Champion and then also, I think, Champion Plus. And so if you plant them, you would want to get them started in February. But if you'll get them started that early, they will give you blooms for 2 years instead of one.
Yeah, I think that must be what I have in my yard. But the other thing I loved about them is the different colors. So I've had a dark purple. Right now I have dark purple and kind of a light pink. I know I've had a lighter purple, too. But since they're self-sowing, I haven't seen any lighter purple in my yard this
year. It may be that that lighter purple isn't as genetically dominant. And the other two colors, they can hybridize fairly readily, but it could be that the other two colors are dominant colors and that lighter purple was recessive. And as they bred with the other Canterbury Bells, that was went back to being a recessive trait.
Yeah, the darker purple is obviously the strongest one because that's the one that I have the most of. I think I have one pink plant left. So I'm like, oh, reseed.
Yeah, get some seeds. Throw
I
them
actually
out there.
Take the after the plant is done, the bulb is done, flower's done, I actually just snip them off and throw them in the flower bed, so wherever they come up.
Yeah, no, that works, and that's exactly what you would have done if you had a cottage garden or an English-style garden, or do have one, and you let them come up where they will, and if, you know, if you come up where you don't need them, when they're young, dig them and move them, or just rogue them out.
Yeah, it doesn't really work for someone who wants everything, like, perfectly placed.
No. No.
So if that's you, that you're not going to love the Canterbury Bells. But I love them. I think they're just beautiful.
They are very beautiful and very carefree.
And you can find out more about the Canterbury Bells on the KSL Greenhouse Facebook page. Ton has put up an article. Ton and Carlos have put up an article for you this morning. Also, if you go back just a few posts, you can also see the ones that are blooming in my garden as well. When we come back, we're going to take your phone calls. Number to call. Phone lines are open right now. Good time to call. Number to call, 801-575-8255. You can also text us at 57500.
I'm Dave Cawley, investigative journalist and host of the podcast, Cold. Don't miss Cold's new Season 3, where I look into the unsolved disappearance of Cherie Warren, a woman last seen leaving her job at a Salt Lake City office in 1985. Police cast suspicion on Cherie's estranged husband and boyfriend, but never made any arrests or recovered Cherie's remains. Find Cold Season 3, The Search for Cherie, anywhere you get your podcasts.
Thank you for spending your Saturday morning with the KSL Greenhouse. Maria Anton with you. Phone lines are open, 801-575-8255. You can also text us your questions at 57500. Ton, last week, your quick tip was about planting vegetables and that it's still not too late to plant certain types of vegetables. And my question for you, I just admitted that I only have tomatoes in. Is it too late to plant my zucchini seeds or my cucumber seeds?
No, you will get zucchinis and squash.
Zucchini do so well, right?
They do. It's just going to be that they might be a few weeks later. The soil's still cool enough, and you could probably even get away with some tomatoes. They wouldn't bloom, they wouldn't produce fruit quite as early, but sometimes that's not necessarily a bad thing if you can spread your season out a bit.
Mm-hmm.
And so it's getting to that point that it's getting a little late, but if you need to get a few odds and ends in, I would say do it.
Would I be better off just going, because I always do zucchini and cucumber from seed. Is it better just to go with a plant?
Not necessarily. They bloom in warm, they like warm soil, and so the seeds will germinate much more rapidly. Man, those redundant much more rapidly. But anyway, they will bloom more rapidly when the soil is warm. And so a lot of farmers actually, for their pumpkins and some other squash crops, wait until the 1st of June because the soil is just warmer then and they have fewer problems. And with pumpkins, I know of one of the major producers down here in Utah County, Harwards, oftentimes doesn't plant pumpkins until mid-June because he wants to time the ripening later in the season so that they're still, you know, hard and nice for Halloween.
Right. I know one year I thought, oh, I'm going to be better off putting in the plants, but the plants had a hard time taking root
because
it was so warm.
Yeah.
So I think I would have been better off that year just going with the seed.
If you transplant squash family plants, they need to be transplanted about 2 to 3 weeks after they're seeded. And so you only want them 2 or 3 inches out of the container and just little babies with 3 or 4 leaves. If they get bigger, they are difficult to transplant.
Right. And things like lettuces, you're going to be planting throughout the season anyway in order to get a, you know, a
good
batch all season.
There are some heat-tolerant lettuces out there, but a lot of the traditional varieties will bolt. And so that's when they elongate and go to seed.
Oh, I've seen it.
And the leaves are very bitter.
Mm-hmm.
And so if you're going to do the lettuce, there are a few heat-tolerant varieties. You might still want to put some shade cloth over them. And they're a little bit more bitter than the spring varieties, but they're still very edible, you know, especially if you mix them with other greens. And so if you do that, there are a few varieties out there.
I've noticed that my Swiss chard, I do have some Swiss chard coming up from last year, which I always appreciate when it's something I haven't had to replant.
Yeah, Swiss chard is one that, even though I don't like it cooked as much, I'll wash it and maybe just cut it up and put it in a salad. And it's a little bit thicker than other things. But that's...
Oh, you just haven't had it done correctly.
Well...
That's all I'm going to say about that. It's my favorite. It's the most delicious vegetable.
Yeah, I've discussed my childhood trauma with vegetables a few times on the show. But it's one of those that I'm finding a lot more... I like a lot more things when they're cooked differently than when I was younger.
You steam them, you put a little bit of olive oil and lemon juice and salt and pepper, and they're just delicious. And they aren't thick or any of those things that you just said. Whatever you just said, that's not a good description.
Salad is just...
I don't use them. I don't eat them raw.
Yeah.
So maybe that's...
Ranch dressing masks the taste of almost anything. So
you're terrible.
I love spinach rod, but don't like it cooked. And
yeah, let's go to our listener questions before I get you into too much trouble. The first listener says they have a red grape that's over 15 years old. This year, when it's sending up a lot of suckers, is this normal?
It is. It could be that it was a little bit damaged from the cold, but grapes, as they mature, will send up suckers and things. And if you don't want them, cut them back.
So when we're talking about suckers, we're just talking about more vines, though, aren't we?
We are, but sometimes those grapes are grafted. And if they're, I'd need to know the variety. If they're more American time grapes type grapes, they won't be. If they're hybrid grapes, like a lot of our table grapes, there's a chance that they're on a different rootstock, and they could be a different plant. I don't think it would be, but there is that possibility.
Mm-hmm.
And so if the grapes vigorous and thriving and they're happy with what they have, they can just cut them back, but they can let them go also.
Talk for a second. I know that in my grandmother's yard, she had more than one type of grape. And so now when I go to pick the grapes there, I don't have a clue what kind. Some are red with seeds, the little ones. Some are big with seeds. And then she's planted some little green ones, but they don't mix. Like they don't, the hybrid doesn't change just because they're planted next to other
grapes. No, they don't. And so the seeds in there, if they were closely related grapes and you planted the seeds, they wouldn't come back true to type of what the parent was. They would be something different. And so if you had like an Interlaken and then a Hemrod, which are both bred from American species, those would be viable and the seeds eventually would give you a grape somewhere intermediate between the two parents.
Mm-hmm.
But just because you have several varieties together, it's the seeds that are different and not the fruit. Genetically, they will, with a few exceptions, produce fruit that's true to type. Now, interestingly, the way we get seedless grapes is that every once in a while you'll have a seeded grape that produces what is called a chimera, and there will be a whole vine or a whole branch that has seedless versions of that grape.
Mm-hmm.
And it's not like you can plant seeds to get more of them. And so that's when you harvest that at the appropriate time of year and root them, so that the only way you can propagate them is to either graft them or take cuttings and root them in soil, because they don't produce seeds.
Right. And one of the grapes that she has is just a teeny little green grape, but it is the most delicious grape. No seeds. What would you think that that is?
It could be.
I don't want to dig it up. I know what's going to happen. But
if it may be Interlaken or Himrod, which are they're an American hybrid that are meant to mimic Thompson Seedless.
Mm-hmm.
But it could be Thompson Seedless, because even though Thompson's in the store are great big, they've had a lot of manipulation on the farm to get them that big. And when Thompsons are grown locally, they are smaller, but they're the sweetest, most delicious grape I've ever had.
Yeah, they're tiny and come in really tight clusters. And, you know, usually grapes are a little bit looser, but these are really tight clusters.
And if there's no musky flavor, and that musky flavor is just for the listeners, when you drink purple grape juice, the finishing taste on that purple grape juice after you've swallowed is called the musky flavor.
Mm-hmm.
Sometimes it's called foxy, and if there's no foxy or musky flavor, then it's probably a European grape. And to where Thompson's is hardy down to about 5 to 10 degrees above zero, but there are areas that are warmer on the Wasatch Front, if you plant them in a protected area, that they will produce. And if it's just not pure sugar, but just really sweet and just really mild, it's probably Thompson.
Next listener would like to know, what is the best spray to keep the little worms out of my cherries?
Well, this close, it's Captain Jack's Dead Bug Brew is organic and has a short, what's called a pre-harvest interval. That's the wait between spraying and harvesting.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe something like Neem Pie or Triple Action, but I wouldn't do anything harsher than those. Those are reduced risk or organic, just to make it so you can still harvest the cherries.
Yeah. Their next question is it bad to digest the worms?
No.
It can't be
protein.
Because how many times have I been eating cherries, right? And then I open one, just happen to open one and go, oh my gosh.
Yeah, if you haven't sprayed, you don't look. You just pop it in and take the pit out and move on. So it's one of those things
protein.
That, you know, when you've got the wormy cherries or whatever it is, you either don't look or they're given to the neighbors. It's, you know, if you can sort them.
Ton. But, you know, if you clean them, you can still put them in a pie.
You can. You can. And
you know, and you have to cut them in half anyway to put them in the pie.
Yeah. It's a video that we need to get at some point, and it's the processing plants down in Payson and Santaquin that process all of our pie cherries, those tarts, have machines that pit the cherries.
Mm-hmm.
They roll down a line, and then these machines have little pins on them that the cherry sits there and the pins punch down and punch the pit out, and then the cherries just roll on. And so they've been washed and pitted, and they'll be frozen within 5 to 10 minutes and then boxed and shipped. But it's fascinating to watch these pitting lines. And if you grow cherries, it would almost be, especially when you have to hand pit them, you're like, man, I should spend a couple $1,000 on a pitting machine.
Right. I would like to see a video of that, Ton. So maybe one of these days we'll have to go down there and ask them if we
could. Yeah, I would need to clear it, but that might be a possibility.
Video. Right. Okay. Next listener wants you to talk about curly leaf on tomatoes. Are we already seeing problems with tomatoes?
We had a caller last week, and curly top is... Now, I will, before we launch into curly top, when we start getting into the 90s and 100s, there's certain tomato varieties that have leaves that curl up into the shape of a cigar.
Oh.
And that is not curly top. It's just a reaction to the heat, and some varieties of tomatoes are more likely to do it than others.
But the tomato will still be okay.
They're fine. Now, curly top starts at the top of the tomato. The leaves start to curl and turn light green. And over a period of 4 or 6 weeks, it works its way down the plant, and the plants eventually die. And so if you know how to identify it, you just remove those plants, hoping to keep the leaf hoppers that are in there from spreading to your other tomatoes. You can try to spray, but all it takes is one strike from an infected leafhopper or aphid, and the tomato's infected.
Okay, you're talking about leafhoppers, and my neighbor said, I have grasshoppers. Do you have grasshoppers? I haven't seen any grasshoppers, but I said, if you have them, I'm sure that I will.
The grasshoppers are out also, and I saw somebody brought in three or four trees, samples of trees, yesterday with leaves, and three of the four had grasshopper damage on them. And so what you're going to look for with grasshopper damage is that the feeding isn't perfectly round circles. It's a lot more jagged, and they will oftentimes feed on the edge of the leaf or in the middle. But if you look up grasshopper damage, it's very identifiable.
All right. Number to call with your questions, 801-575-8255. You can also text us at 57500. We'll be back following the news.
Two years ago, Americans watched in horror as a crisis unfolded at the Kabul airport.
She was tear-gassed and beaten.
Images of thousands desperate to escape Taliban oppression filled our news feeds. More than 80,000 Afghans made it to America. But the story didn't end there.
It was very cold. There was no power, no heat.
Who would help our newest neighbors? I'm Andrea Smartin. In Stranger Becomes Neighbor, you'll hear the stories of some remarkable refugees who left their homes and their dreams behind only to start over from zero.
Their only possession was three blankets.
And you'll meet Americans who stepped up to help them.
You want me to come when you deliver your baby.
What can one person do in the face of an international disaster decades in the making? That's Stranger Becomes Neighbor. Find us at kslpodcast.com. Follow us on Apple Podcasts or anywhere else you listen.